Good afternoon, everybody. On behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society, my name is Joe Beaumont, and we are here with more Grit City Stories. Today I have a very special guest for me. It is the 37th mayor of our fine city of Tacoma, Mr. Bill Bosma. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
It is great to have you here. Thank you for coming out on a lovely fall day of rain and overcast.
My pleasure.
So, getting right into this, you were the 37th mayor from 2001 to 2009, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very transitory time with technology and development, and you kind of spearheaded some major projects through Tacoma, it looks like. What were some of your favorite things that you worked on over your time as mayor?
That's a good question. I was most fortunate in that, I was kind of in the right person at the right time, so to speak. First off, I have real strong support for historic preservation. That's always been a top priority for me, and there were some projects that were in limbo that could have gone one way or the other, depending upon the outcome of the mayor's race.
Mm.
One is the preservation and restoration of the Murray Morgan Bridge, which is iconic to the story of Tacoma, built in 1913, really a tremendous engineering feat at the time. It's a cantilever bridge built at an angle, first time that ever been attempted by engineers.
Oh, wow.
We were told repeatedly when I was back as a city council member by the state that it had to come down. the city brought in some, under the leadership of city manager Jim Walton, the city brought in some engineers that took a second look at that bridge and concluded that it was overbuilt and for trolleys. And as a result, it could be restored and could last another 100 years.
Same.
And so that happened, and I was pleased to see that. It's an important link to the Puyallup River Peninsula connecting downtown. Secondly, Albers Mill, again, the last vestige of the way the city waterway once was, a brick building that was again destined for the wrecking ball. And I worked hard to restore that and maintain that. And that was another accomplishment that was important. And then the Seaport Museum, the old Balfour Dock building that was on shaky pin, so to speak, and was problematic. It was owned by the city, and the city really hadn't paid enough attention to it. A nonprofit came into the picture, and I worked closely with them in restoring and maintaining that facility as well. So those are all wins in terms of historic preservation. Well, I might also add the McMinimans, the Elks Lodge.
Ah, yes.
And the brothers, of course, were looking at. And that was an important project for me. Worked closely with the brothers and brothers McMenamin. They then came forward and put together a very challenging project. A lot of people said it couldn't be done. In fact, in all these, the state said we couldn't restore the bridge. There were certain interests in the city that said that there's no way that we could restore the Albers Mill to make it functional.
Oh, wow.
And there were people saying that it was a hopeless cause to restore the Elks Lodge, which had been occupied by vagrants, and much of the inside had been ripped out. But the brothers made a commitment, and so we have that as well. There were some disappointments. I was hoping that I could put together a project that would restore the Winthrop Hotel to make it into Tacoma's version of the Davenport, which is in Spokane.
Yep.
And I think in many respects, the Winthrop even had greater potential than the Davenport. But I wasn't able to make that happen, and that was one of my great disappointments in terms of historic preservation. It's now used for low-income housing, which is fine, but it could have been a showcase historic hotel. And we came very close on that score and didn't quite make it. I think the economy was a factor there. So those are all historic preservation projects that I was intimately involved with, worked for, that I take satisfaction. I think that if there were projects that hinged on the outcome of my race in 2001, those would be it.
Those are definitely all incredible to this day. The bridge looks gorgeous, obviously,
oh,
and McMinniman's. Have you visited all 8 bars and restaurants?
Well, of course, there's a room named after me.
Yeah,
the Bill Barsman room, which I've been to. I haven't stayed there yet, but that's on my agenda. Sorry, at some point in the future, that my spouse and I will stay in the Bill Barsman room.
Well, that would be
with a bottle of champagne.
I feel if it's named after you, you get a bottle of champagne.
Yeah, absolutely.
On check-in. I hope that's how it works. Well, you spoke briefly about the waterway there. You also spearheaded the Foss Waterway cleanup and just the whole development of that area, which personally, I am thankful for because I lived in one of the new developments down there. So seeing the state it was in beforehand, I'm very thankful to the man who, a few of us would honestly say, got rid of the Tacoma aroma that Seattle kept wanting to make fun of us for.
Yeah, well, we, you know, and I give credit to Simpson that invested, not WestRock, that invested nearly $100 million in upgrading their facility to mitigate the impact of the Tacoma aroma. But the cleanup of the Foss Waterway was a huge project, and the original idea was that the city was prepared to take all this gunk up that had been accumulated over 100 years, a toxic gunk, put it on a barge and dump it in Commencement Bay and cover it. That's when I was a council member, and there were I was vehemently opposed to that scheme.
I'm glad someone was.
Yeah. And so we were approached by Simpson, and Simpson said, look, we have this waterway, St. Paul Waterway, that is of no use. So rather than dumping all this toxic gunk in Commencement Bay, why don't we work with the city? Why don't we work with you and put a berm across the St. Paul Waterway, which, again, is of no use, drain it. And you can use that as a depository for all of this gunk, and then we can cover it with five feet of clean earth, restore that area, and even create some waterways, some streams adjacent. So it's a win-win.
Yes.
We can take care of the Foss Waterway without dumping all this crap into Commencement Bay. We can restore some property for us, and you can win. Interestingly enough, we had a challenge with the Environmental Protection Agency that had signed off on this scheme to dump it in Commencement Bay. And when we changed our approach, which took a little more time, they were essentially saying to us that we're going to fine you for doing this other alternative approach because, you know, it's contrary to what we agreed to. So I had to make a call to my good friend Congressman Norm Dix, and some calls were made to Environmental Protection Agency to work out an arrangement where we could make that happen and at the same time not be fined for doing the right thing.
Yes, I'm glad you weren't fined for making it better for all parties involved.
Well, thank you.
Cleaned up the Foss. It was absolutely gorgeous to walk up and down now, especially on the residential side, restaurants, museums. You were also key in putting those museums there, correct in my research.
Well, yeah, you know, I was certainly involved. I was on the city council when we first discussed. In fact, let's go back further.
All right.
And that's a good question you asked. There's things now are popping into my memory. So when I first got on the city council, when I was elected to the city council in 1991, I was teaching at the University of Puget Sound, and I approached the president at that time, Phil Phibbs, and asked if it were all right with him for me to run and maintain my position as a faculty member, and he encouraged me to do so. So with his blessing and his approach and his essentially approval, I filed and ran and served two terms as a city council member, winning in 91 and then being reelected and being termed out in 99. During that time, Phil was convening a group of people in the top floor conference room of the Russell Building with representatives from Dale Shihuly and other notables, representatives from the Executive Committee for Greater Tacoma, David Allen and others, and to talk about what should be done with the waterway, how the private sector could participate in the restoration of that and beautification of that, west side of it.
Yep.
And he wanted me to be the city's representative. And I checked with the city manager, Ray Corpus, and I said, I have this invitation, and is it all right with you? I'd be involved in these conversations. He said, by all means. And so we met on a semi-regular basis at that time, talking about what can be done. And first idea was a kind of a hot shop down on the waterway. The Shihuly people, again, were there present in the conversation. And that continued to evolve. Phil Phibbs taking the lead, a close friend of Dale's. And out of that came this concept of a world-class glass museum and hot shop.
Yes.
And so then the question was, you know, we need a world-class architect to come up with the design. And one was hired, Arthur Erickson. And out of that came, and then on top of it, George Russell, he's no longer involved, but at the time he was, worked closely with Phil as well, and was a good friend of Phibbs and a benefactor at the University of Puget Sound. And so it was, George said, I'm going to go out and I'm going to raise the money for this world-class museum. I'm a great fan of glass art. I'm going to travel the world and we'll make get support from all my contacts. Some of that came to pass, but not all of it. Finally, George wrote out a check for $52 million, and they were able to build that. the garage under it, which was a way in which we could mitigate the impact
yep.
of the uplands, was built by the city, owned by the city, and then the museum, the air rights were sold to the nonprofit, which then built the museum, and of course it's world class. There isn't a hot shop like it anywhere in the world,
no.
I will say, because I've visited Murano and I visited Biot, and there aren't hot shops there that can compare to what we have here. And world class artists come here.
Yes.
People aren't aware of this. The greatest glass art, not just Dale, he arrived, he shows up from time to time, but no, Arthur Perini and others, just incredibly talented artists from France, Italy, and you name it, come to Tacoma. Simply because of that. It's amazing.
I got to say, moving to Tacoma in the past year, that was one thing I never knew about the city. And then when I found out, I kind of like you mentioned, when you think of world-class glass artists, you think of Italy, of France, of North Africa, Morocco.
Right.
And Tacoma is actually leading the charge. That is, I feel, an incredible hidden gem that, especially with this museum and with the help of artists like Chihuly, it's getting out there that Tacoma is this hub, creativity and this medium.
And it is interesting, at the same time that this was going on, there was an effort to raise money to build the Tacoma Art Museum.
Oh, okay.
And Anton Predock, another world-renowned architect, was hired. And I think a lot of the people who were involved in that effort were advised by consultants that it would be very difficult for a city of our size to construct two world-class museums employing two of the greatest architects, among the top 10. And it was a never say no attitude. We can do it. We'll make it happen. And, and folks were able to raise money to build that. And then Evan Hobb, who was a German billionaire, now deceased, whose sons were born here in St. Joe's, he hadn't had affinity for Tacoma. He became very interested in the Tacoma Art Museum and said to the director of the art museum, this is kind of after I left the scene, but I was still keenly interested. Said to the director, how would you like? Would you like to have my collection of Western art, one of the most expansive collections, privately held collections in the world? And Stephanie Stubeck, who was the director at the time, said, "Well, that's fine. We'd love to have it. We have no space for it." And he said, "Well, I will build you a wing." And he wrote out a check for $13 million so that they could build a wing to hold his Western art. And then another wing has been built as well for another collections. That's an incredible success story. And then finally, I'm not through. It's not over. Finally, of course, there's the May Car Museum.
Oh, yes.
And the world's greatest car museum. And that one was an interesting storytelling. LeMay's were interested, Harold LeMay, prior to his passing, and Nancy, his spouse, were interested in something, some kind of world-class museum, and came to the city when I was council member. Brian Ebersole was mayor. And I had actually gone out to his, and I still remember this, I'd actually gone out to see his collection, which is, he's got thousands of cars.
It's quite expensive.
It's the largest privately held collection of cars in the world. And I said, and he was in the council chambers at that dais, and I said to him, I said, "Mr. LeMay," I said, "I've seen your collection, but there's one car that's missing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to see it, and I think you know what I'm considering." And he kind of nodded, because I was referring to the Tucker, and there were only 43 of them made.
Oh, wow.
Preston Tucker. There's actually a film about Preston Tucker and the car. Mm-hmm. It was so ahead of its time. It was built in the 1940s. And there are 43 of them still out there. And he was out searching for one. In fact, he was bidding on that one. And finally, from what I understand, is that as he was, quite ill, his spouse, Nancy, assured him she would find a Tucker in his name. And they have one of the finest, and it's been in the museum. It has one of the finest Tuckers. And but the car museum includes more than just his collection. Mm-hmm. There are cars there that are on loan from all over the world. One of a kind. Cars that are literally priceless. You can't put a price tag on them because there's only one of them.
I think one of my favorites in the car museum is the Flintstone mobile.
Oh, yes.
Always
oh,
a classic. Yes. Just kind of stands out between the Model Ts and the classic fire trucks.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing about the car museum that just kind of blew me away when I first went there is the fact that the, dome engine hood, whatever you want to call the structure of the building, is made out of lumber. It looks like a big sheet metal creation. I don't know how else to describe it.
It looks like a fender.
Exactly. Oh, yes. much better way to describe the Cobb Museum. Yeah. I'm struggling here with my automotive terminology. But well, when you go inside, it's beautiful lumber.
Yeah, and that was a very complicated project. It took a lot of permutation. They had a grand design initially.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be up on the upper parking lot. And they weren't able to put that together because the economy collapsed.
Yep.
And so they were struggling to find a way of making it happen. So then they came up with kind of a plan B interim, which would be kind of essentially a building that would allow car owners to kind of work on their cars there as kind of an interim.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, people who own Corvettes and so on can bring them in. And then they decided, we're going to come up with another design, a third concept, which is what you see now,
okay,
which was not quite what the original idea was,
mm-hmm,
plan A or plan B, but a tremendous success, another $60 million museum. Just built, and the city, of course, contributed the land,
mm-hmm,
which sits adjacent to the Tacoma Dome.
Yes.
Which is another story.
They are, three world-class museums in
such
a confined space as well, not just saying the city's small,
right,
but they're all essentially walking distance from each other. It's absolutely incredible.
I do have to also mention that the Washington State Historical Society Museum is also,
yes,
here, and designed by another world-renowned architect, Charles Moore. And he looked at the adjacent Union Station.
Yes.
And created a design that would have the grand arches so that, mm-hmm, as you entered Tacoma on Pacific Avenue, on one side you'd see these grand arches entry at an entry point. The other side, of course, is the University of Washington Tacoma.
Yep.
Which also was a part of Charles Moore's effort, which is another story. University of Washington Tacoma, which, you know, when you build a branch campus, which, mm-hmm, was originally the idea, the business model, so to speak, is you tear down all the old buildings and you build these towers of glass and steel.
Oh, wow.
And rather than do that, the decision was made to use buildings that were built by the railroad back,
yeah,
in the 1880s when Tacoma was selected as the terminus of the second transcontinental railroad. And so to restore those historic buildings, to bring them up seismically and to take the wood outside and remill it and then build classrooms and faculty offices in those buildings.
Yep.
That was an incredible accomplishment. So during my term as mayor, that was all before I was mayor. During my term as mayor, I led the effort to convince the legislature to grant a four-year college. Prior to that, University of Washington Tacoma was junior, senior, graduate level.
Okay.
And so through efforts of mine and others, good people, we reached out to legislature and people that I knew in Olympia from my high school days.
Yeah.
And we convinced them that it would be appropriate to convert that into a four-year college. So now you have university. So now you have 18-year-old students,
yep,
coming in from high school. A huge change in organizational culture.
Exactly.
And that happened during my watch, and that's something I'm very proud of.
It sounds like over your time both as council and mayor, you secured the city's pass, the future development, and enshrined the cultural heart of it. So I would say that is a pretty much the best job you can do as someone leading this town. So thank you very much for
efforts there. There are other things too, but fire away.
I'll say, do we have any more German billionaires trying to add wings to museums right now? Do you know?
No. actually, the family, of course, his family is very supportive of our efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another wing, and I'm going to, the name escapes me now, the contributor. It'll pop into my head, but that took place after I left as mayor. The second wing, it was built by a benefactor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the people up north, quite candidly, look with considerable envy as to, you know, they don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit it. And the reason for all that goes back to when Tacoma was selected as the terminus and not, mm-hmm, Seattle. And that tension between the two cities.
The old rivalries.
It started right back then.
Oh, the building's absolutely gorgeous. The exhibits are gorgeous. And
yeah,
having studied German culture and German language over all of my degrees, I am just thoroughly entertained because this is total non sequitur, but for some reason, a lot of Germans are obsessed with the American West. So the fact that a German billionaire is like, I want to show off my collection of American Western paintings, like, That's the guy who I'd expect to own this. I don't know why they love I think it's just because it's so different from anything Europe had. But for some reason, every museum in Germany, massive Western art collection. It's
interesting.
Amazing.
I didn't know that until you just shared it with me.
Fun little facts, but Back to you, and not just my, you know, barroom trivia. Do you have any favorite, I guess, history of Tacoma that you learned while you were mayor or that you knew about beforehand living?
Well, this is something that, of course, it's a dark day, mm-hmm. but it was something that was another priority of mine as, yeah. as a council member and as a mayor, and that is trying to redress what had happened to our Chinese residents back in 1885,
yes.
the fact that through the Tacoma Method, led by the then mayor,
mm-hmm.
Jacob Weisbach, the remaining Chinese who were living here, that built the railroad,
mm-hmm.
that transformed the city, were rounded up and driven out by gunpoint to the railhead where McCord Field is,
yep.
To take the train to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
That was a dark day. And, of course, we have the Chinese Reconciliation Park that I was involved with as a council member, and I served on the board after I retired for a while. And during the time that I was mayor, very supportive in securing funds for it and supportive of the construction of the Chinese Ting,
yep.
which came from Fuzhou,
okay.
the hometown of the current president of China,
oh,
President
wow.
Xi, president for life.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was an important part. Now, I always felt, and it turns out that when I was a council member back in 1992, the council passed a resolution
mm-hmm.
expressing our regrets. And so it turns out that I had the opportunity to visit Qingdao, Sichuan province,
mm-hmm.
and in particular the capital, with Lieutenant Governor Brad Owen. And there were guests there from Beijing. And I had with me that resolution, copy of that resolution, because I wanted it to take it to China
mm-hmm.
so that I could hand it to the Chinese and express verbally our regrets and apologies for what had happened in 1885. And that was kind of a high point for
yeah.
me. Now, they weren't quite sure, you know, when I began my comments, they weren't quite sure what I was getting at, because I referred to Abraham Lincoln.
Yep.
They weren't quite sure, where is this guy going? Abraham Lincoln granted the franchise for the Northern Pacific Railroad
mm-hmm.
that the Chinese pretty much built. And they finally understood. And I had a copy of the resolution, so I was able to give it to officials in China. And that was kind of a high point. And, you know, you're talking about the history and the current situation and the future. And that, to me, was the point in which we could finally close the door
yep.
on that particular episode when I handed that apology for what a former mayor did back in 1885.
Now, like you said, that is
a big deal.
Definitely heavier on the emotional scale, but very,
yep.
very positive overall for both reconciliation and international relations.
Absolutely.
And I just out of curiosity, Fuzhou, is that one of the sister cities of Tacoma?
It is.
Now?
It okay. is. Yes. Well, you know, I went to Qingdao.
Yep.
I've never been to Fuzhou. Mm-hmm. I went to Sichuan Province because the province is the state of Washington's sister. And I was hoping that Sichuan would participate, providing us a Chinese gate
yep.
for our reconciliation park. So that was the purpose of my visit. And the governor of Sichuan invited me to actually go to Mingyan, which had just opened up. It has a university there, 30,000 students, and to meet with the officials. And they brought with me some engineers and so on. We had the plan. And then I went to Qingdao, which is where the pandas are,
mm-hmm.
and later, and that's the capital of Sichuan, to present a copy of the resolution. So it looked promising. I'll get to Fuzhou here in a minute. Looked promising. And Mingyan was going to be not a sister city, but a friendship city, because
mm-hmm.
you only can have one sister city from a particular country, but you can have other friendships. And so Mingyan was designated as a friendship city. And I think it would have happened. They wanted to have something in exchange, and I was going to approach Dale Shihuly to see if Dale would be willing to donate a piece of art to make this happen. And I think he would have,
yep.
If I'd asked him personally. But then the earthquake hit.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
You know, then that pretty much that all came to an end.
Understandably
and it really,
so.
You know, literally knows how many thousands of people died in that
yeah.
earthquake. We sent supplies and money and donations there, and they appreciated that. They were modest, but that was an expression of goodwill.
Yeah.
So that never really came to be. Now, in terms of Fuzhou was negotiated as a sister city through the efforts of our port and port director and port commissioner, Connie Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted that, and we have sister ports as well as sister cities. So,
So
it was the idea was to do both, to have a sister port and a sister city in Fuzhou. And it was at that initial meeting where the papers were signed, the agreements were reached. The current president of China was present at that and was a signatory to that.
Wow.
And so after he became president, of course, the fact that Tacoma was Fuzhou sister city became a big deal.
Yes. I would say so.
One other thing I did want to do. Another thing that was kind of cool. So the representatives from this university in Mingyang, 30,000 students or more, besides the University of Washington, they sent a delegation to the United States to visit various campuses. And so they went to, Caltech and Cal Berkeley and Stanford and so on. And they were, going to Carnegie Tech in the East. And on their schedule was the University of Washington, Tacoma, the Technology Institute. So here this entourage of 13 faculty and staff members from Mingyang University come to the city of Tacoma to meet with the people in our Technology Institute at the University of Washington. Tacoma campus. Not the big main campus in Seattle, but that was cool.
Getting our name out there.
Yeah.
Kind of alluded to it with all the stories that you've had about China so far. As mayor, did you have any other international work? Or?
Yeah. Of course, I visited a number of sister cities. Mm-hmm. I visited Gunsan in South Korea and established a relationship with Mayor Moon. He has a couple PhDs. And, he was very gracious. In fact, I was quite taken. My spouse and I and some staff people visited. He actually invited us to his home.
Oh, wow.
Which was quite an honor for dinner. And so the four of us went to his home and met his family and, of course, had the grand tour. They have a major, most significant public works project in the world has ever seen. They are in the process of draining this inland sea to turn it into agricultural land. And it's a major environmental issue, needless to say. And so they have this huge dike that goes for miles. It's almost like draining Commencement Bay.
Yeah.
In fact, it is. It would be comparable to draining. It's not as deep as Commencement Bay, needless to say, but in terms of square miles.
The scale is impressive.
And so that was kind of an amazing thing to see. And then in Taiwan, mayor there was Mayor Jason Hu, no longer mayor.
Yep.
Talk about that in a minute. And he had been the former foreign minister of Taiwan. And he was a part of the Blue Party and the party of Chiang Kai-shek. And Taiwan's deeply divided, very polarized, kind of like this country. And you have the Greens and the Blues. And the Blues was the party of Chiang Kai-shek, maintained a relationship with mainland.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, he established direct flights from Taipei to Fuzhou and back. And through the efforts of, to a large degree, of Jason Hu, who had all sorts of contacts in the mainland. And much of what you see that comes from the containers that come through the port of Tacoma from China are on ships owned by the Taiwanese, interestingly enough. But they don't talk about that. There's no no government-to-government relationship.
Exactly.
It's indirect through NGOs. And so there was this part of the... Oh, and I did want to mention, too, that in this regard, something that I learned, there was a city official who was Taiwanese,
mm-hmm.
Li Wang, who was with me in my second visit to Taiwan, and we had just gone to the top of what was at one time the tallest building in the world, Taipei.
Oh, yes.
No longer, but it wasn't. And we came out, and I noticed that on the sidewalk, there were all of these protesters protesting the terrible conditions in the prisons in the main. Prisoners had their organs harvested, and just terrible thing. I turned to my friend from Taiwan who was with me, Li Wang, and I said, what is this all about? They're kind of preaching to the choir, so to speak.
Mm.
And he said, no. He said, Bill. He said, we're surrounded by people from the mainland. That's coming out of the building. These aren't Taiwanese people. These are people from the mainland. These are tourists.
Oh, wow.
And I said, well, how do you know? He said, I can tell by the way in which they speak that they're from the mainland. I said, God. And he said, yes, that because of the relationship to people like Jason Hu, literally millions of tourists from the mainland come to visit Taiwan. Well, unfortunately, now the Blues lost in the last election. The Greens now are in control. And they're very hostile towards. So that's why the tension. And so this is affecting, I'm sure, tourist visitation and the relationship between the two. It's, I think, unfortunate.
Yeah. Wow. That is quite some connections you have there.
And one other thing, too. It's kind of cool. Mayor to mayor in a sister city is kind of cool. So when I was meeting with Jason Hu, he was talking about the former government here. We're talking about the former government.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Taichung, our sister city, third largest city in Taiwan, is much larger than Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And they actually consolidated with the surrounding county, so they're even bigger. Like, they're about over 2 million people, 2 to 3 million people now.
Wow.
Anyway, so we were talking about the form of government. I said, you know, I don't understand council manager form of government, he told me. The fact that the mayor has no authority, to me, is hard for me to understand. I don't get it. The fact that you're just as a kind of ceremonial head of government, it's just I'm just not getting it. And then I explain, you know, the good government movement, when I tried to take politics out of government, you know. They always have politics in government. The idea was to
just a little bit.
To sterilize it, you know, from the evils of partisanship, et cetera, and party bosses. Machine politics. And so they created this system where, you know, these part-timers would hire a professional to run the government. They just kind of provide oversight, kind of like a school board.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, let's do this. There's going to be a class. There's a class over here at the university in government. And let's go and debate the forms of government.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you know, I'm not a keen supporter of the city manager system, frankly, but I'll debate in favor. And he said, yeah, and I'll debate the strong mayor system. And so we went into class and they were, you know, learning their English. Mm-hmm. This class, university, and we took off our coats and loosened our ties and had at it and debate for about 45 minutes. It was great fun.
Yeah.
And the students, you know, really appreciated the fact that their mayor and the mayor from the sister cities was in their class debating civics and politics.
Exactly.
And, yeah, that's cool.
No, that's the outreach you want to hear from
it
the mayor.
Cool. It was cool.
I definitely would not have expected, you know, someone from halfway around the world to show up and debate in my civics class.
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Well. So we got a little bit of time here left.
Sure.
Any other just kind of standout moments or favorite moments of your time as mayor?
Yeah. And the other thing that I was involved in early on was not only clean up the Foss Waterway and the restoration. And we had a grander design that was thwarted in large measure by efforts and by the port who supported the construction of this godforsaken prison on the east side of the Foss Waterway.
Yep.
It's an embarrassment. To the country and an embarrassment to the city. And I wasn't mayor at the time that decision was made to build that monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
But the port was determined that to thwart any kind of residential development on the east side of the Foss Waterway. It just cockamamie. It had, you know, and the east side did pose no threat to them. The big threat was northeast Tacoma, the residential development on the side of the hill. That was the threat. if there's a threat to a residential encroachment into an industrialized area, it wasn't the east side of the Foss Waterway.
Mm-hmm.
But they made that as a cause celeb, and they were the ones that worked with the then certain members of the city council to build that. So that's a disappointment.
Yep.
And I wasn't mayor at the time, but I will tell you that if I had been on the city council and if I had been mayor, that had been discussed, I would have done everything to kill that project. And if I had been mayor, the mayor has, even though it doesn't have the authority, people think, and believe the mayor has authority. So I think I could have stopped it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a disappointment in terms of FOSS. Now, as you move up, the other big project was, what do you do with the toxic smolder site?
Yeah, exactly.
And so here you had, so that's another story. So here you had, when I was a council, the SARCO ended all operations and the stack came down.
Mm-hmm.
It was at one time the tallest smokestack in the world,
nearly
600 feet high. Came down. I was there. I worked at the smolder, by the way,
in
my summers, student at UPS, University of Puget Sound. So then the question was, you know, what do you do with that site? And the fellow who was the superintendent, who I kept meeting with because nothing was happening, let me backtrack. So the idea was that a SARCO would remediate the site, make it pad ready for development, and at a development authority like the now defunct Foss Waterway Development Authority, that's another story, because that would not be defunct if I were mayor, but it's now defunct. There'd be a development authority created to take care of the ASARCO site. And so ASARCO came to us and Rustin and the Park District and said, look, if you're willing to allow us to build an on-site containment facility for the spoils, it would meet all of the Environmental Protection Agency and Department of Ecology requirements.
Mm-hmm.
If you allow us to do that, rather than to ship this crap to Umatilla, Oregon, or Eastern Washington, if you allow us to do that, we will remediate the site and have a development for pad ready for development. That was the grand bargain. And Brian Ebersol was mayor and I was a council member, and Paul Miller was a council member in the district at the time. And I can remember we met it in Ruston and we lifted our champagne glass, and Ray Corpus was city manager. We cut this deal and it was agreed to by the court, consent decree. Deal was cut, and then Asarco hired a Merritt Pardini architectural firm to come up with a grand design, led by Jim Merritt, and they came up with a grand design. And I kept going to the superintendent, Tom Aldrich. I kept going to him and saying, you know, when is this, when are you going to start here?
Yep.
You know, because yeah, I see the fence and the barbed wire and, and the skulls and the signs and so on, and do not toxic site, do not step. And I see, your on-site containment facility being built and the spoils and so on. And when are you going to get going on this?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, we'll get going on this, Bill, when the price of copper goes up. Right now, it's very low in the commodities market. But once it gets up to a certain price point, this is the promise. We're ready to go. So great, because we had set that we had reached this agreement. Handshake,
yep.
And we signed it off, and everything was a go. And they made a commitment; they were going to invest hundreds of millions of dollars to remediate this. So as soon as the price of copper reached that price point, commodities reached that price point, they sold out to a Mexican firm.
Oh,
and the Mexican firm, and so essentially, the Mexican firm took all the resources from drained all the resources from Asarco, and they walked away.
Oh wow!
They walked away. And they said, "F you." So now here we are. The city can't do it. Because the city's pretty much committed all of its resources to the Foss Waterway development.
Yep.
And the city couldn't come in and deal with that. So you had this 83-acre site, toxic waste site, one of the worst in the world, by the way, right adjacent to Commencement Bay, sitting there with fenced in. Nothing going to happen. The only thing that the Environmental Protection Agency required of Asarco was to set aside money for the cleanup of properties in the north end of Tacoma, but not the 83 acres.
Wow.
So it sat there fallow, right?
Yep.
No hope, really. And then a guy by the name of Michael Cohen,
mm-hmm.
who had some property on the east side of the Foss Waterway, came to the city, and he was in a dispute because he was going to build a condos on the east side. And the port was, going ape crap, and other interests were going crazy because he had a vested site for condos on the east side,
yep.
across from where you're at.
Yes.
And so he kind of came to the city and cut a deal with the city manager, Eric Anderson, to sell that site to the city of Tacoma for $5 million to build Urban Waters, which we now see. That's the laboratory that you know about.
Yes.
Platinum LEED certified, by the way.
Huh.
And he took the $5 million and joined together with some business partners and bought the Asarco site. And as soon as he purchased the Asarco site, he was liable for a $1.3 billion cleanup.
Wow.
Because once you own it.
Yeah.
You're responsible for cleaning it up if it's superfund. So he buys it and he starts construction of a building. He actually starts work on it and takes what Merritt developed and uses a template that we use for the cleanup of the uplands of the Foss Waterway, same template. And of course, all that slag is built on a slag that's built on over the water. That's where most of the Asarco site was. It's created by Asarco when they dumped the slag. And slag is kind of like what comes out of a volcano. It's kind of like lava. So a lot of everything's contained within that slag. All
wild.
Of the bad stuff's pretty much contained. So the idea is if you build over it and seal it both on the uplands and along the water's edge, you've pretty much remediated it. And that was the deal that was struck. But the problem was, as soon as he started construction of the first building, the copper line, the economy collapses again. And so now he can't do a damn thing. I mean, the economy collapses. And so you see this beginning construction of this one building on this site. And how do you, jumpstart this and get it going? Well, the economy started to recover and he started getting investments. And then they came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Cohen's, and said, we really need some help here making some connections. Now, I'm not mayor. This is after I've left as mayor.
Okay.
But I'm with the Fuzhou Sister City Committee
at
the time. And they came to me and said, we're going to venture to China to see if we can get some investment from China. And so I connected him with Michael Fowler of the World Trade Center here, who speak fluent Mandarin.
Oh, wow.
And Michael went with the Cohens to China, and they were able to secure funding there and some private funding. And so now you see Point Rustin.
Yes.
Which is built on one of the most toxic waste sites in the world that had no chance for a while. But now you see an urban village. And that to me is a miracle. And then I'll leave you with one other miracle. I say it's a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Shalishan housing, new Shalishan project. Another final story.
Okay.
So may not be final. So I'm mayor now, and I'm at the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting in Los Angeles, and I've just finished a panel discussion. I chaired a panel, and as I was leaving the meeting, a staff person from the Conference of Mayors approached me and said, Mayor Bharisma, you're Mayor Bharisma, are you not? I said, yeah. He said, I want you to know that the city of Tacoma made the front pages of the New York Times. And when he saw my crestfallen face, because we'd had some bad publicity, needless to say, in the past, and he saw my chagrin, he said, no, Mayor. He said, Mayor, it's good news. And I said, how so? It's about New Shalishan. You're on the front page. And so I got, I went to the gift shop, got the New York Times, and yes, indeed, right in the front page was a lead article on the success of New Shalishan, the remarkable $300 million affordable housing planned village. I met with Michael Mira, who was the director of the Tacoma Housing Authority, which came up with this idea that made it happen. And I kept referring to it as like the miracle on ice.
Yeah.
He said, don't use that word because, it wasn't a miracle, a lot of hard work and a lot of good people. But he said, one of the criticisms we have is, a lot of these low-income people are living in too nice accommodations. I've gotten credits of improving. We have underground utilities, and we've got state-of-the-art buildings and beautiful parks and open space and tree canopies. And people are saying that we're being too generous to low income. Believe it or not,
that was
at one time a purely a public housing project owned by the Tacoma Housing Authority, and they converted. And that's now still partially public housing, but also home ownership. So
awesome.
Half of that property, half of those condominiums that are there in those homes, actually, that are in Shalishan are owned by the people who live there.
That's
amazing.
Awesome. Yeah.
And they're all on tax rolls. We're getting property tax revenues that we didn't get before. So that's another incredible success story for the city of Tacoma.
Yeah.
And Michael Mira's, said to me the other day, he was here, and he said, Mayor, he said, you were right there with us right from the very beginning. And so I consider you one of our champions. And so that, too, was a success.
Yeah, no, that
during the 8 years
that
was mayor.
That is absolutely incredible, taking
truly
care of people like that.
You look at Point Ruston and Shalishan,
exactly,
and the Foss Waterway, all these and all the museums. My golly, that was during that 8 year time period.
Yeah.
All these projects kind of came to culmination. Now, it wasn't through my efforts. I will say that my historic preservation efforts were, I think, to a large degree because of me.
Mm.
But I was very supportive of these other projects and was a part of the team, obviously.
Yeah.
That made it happen.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for those efforts. That's, like you said, in 8 years to see all of that come together is absolutely incredible.
Transformative.
Before we part here, one more question. Do you have any advice for those who want to learn more about their local history or help preserve their local history?
Well, you can certainly become a member of the Tacoma Historical Society. I'd love to have you become a member and learn about your city, our city, through our newsletter and through our website, if you want to learn about the city. Also, you can come and visit us at 406 Tacoma Avenue South and visit our retail center. We've got probably the best collection of books on Tacoma's history that you'll find anywhere. If you want to read about the city and some of the cast of characters, the important people that were involved in Tacoma's success, you can read about that, learn about it right here. And so that would be one way, obviously, tune in and what's going on. Support your local press, the News Tribune. A lot of people complain about the News Tribune, but it's our only medium that covers local news other than Tacoma Weekly. A lot of things now that people wouldn't know about, stories, still appear in the News Tribune. So be supportive of your local press and just tune in and become active. There's an array of committees, advisory committees and citizens committees that you can participate in and be a part of, and you can get that list through the City of Tacoma's website. And, of course, Channel 12 Municipal TV is a way to kind of tune in to see what's going on. We're oftentimes on City Line talking about what we're doing here. So those would be the ways in which you can participate and become involved.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society, Mr. Bharisma, thank you very much. For those of you who missed the introduction, that was
Mr. Bill Bosma, the 37th mayor of our city of Tacoma. I am Joe Boma. This has been another Grit City Story. A great rest of your day.